Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Daniel. Welcome to Rule the Roost podcast. I'm just seeing if this has pulled through into YouTube now. We have an excellent collection, apparently. So I reckon let's just go with this, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome back to the show,
mate. It to my many tens of active followers. Will it be appearing?
Please do.
Okay. All right, let's go.
How are you getting on, mate? How is everything today? Can I say loosely a shit sandwich, a Tottenham, you know, sandwich between an Arsenal and a Chelsea fixture?
Yeah, it definitely feels like a big week, not to mention Liverpool on Sunday. I felt like at the start of the week, it could really be one of those weeks where we look back on as sort of galvanising the whole club and the real week where Ange won over all the doubters and got everyone on board. Or it could be a week where it really all went to shit. And I'm not saying it's make or break or anything like that. I think we're far too early for that. But it could be a great one or a terrible one. And we're kind of halfway to a terrible one. It could really pick up tonight. It could still go downhill tonight, but then pick up dramatically with a kind of landmark performance on Sunday. So, yeah, just great to have the big games coming thick and fast, really, after these weird long breaks of 2 weeks after Fulham and after Newcastle, which I really didn't enjoy. And I think most Spurs fans didn't enjoy, particularly given the results.
Well, it's funny. I'd be interested to know from you, what's the mood in the camp, like the mood around the club? Because it feels like from the fan base, when you just have a temperature check on Twitter or X, as we say now, it feels like people aren't really as, you know, this is 8 years to the day, apparently, since the Battle of the Bridge at Stamford Bridge, is it? Oh, no, it's 8 years to the day since, yeah, I think it is Battle of the Bridge.
No, it is, the eight-year anniversary today. At least I hope it is, because that was the start of my preview in today's paper. So yeah. I believe it is, yeah.
And it feels like there's an air of resignation around kind of Spurs fans, not even in so much as, oh, we think we're going to lose, more that they're not really that bothered anymore. It feels like Villa are out of sight ahead of us. It feels like United aren't really going to catch us. And if they do, it means they'll have beaten Arsenal. So, you know, it feels
I know
like
what you mean.
This isn't quite as exciting as it maybe should be.
I felt like that for a while, in that this season just hasn't had a lot of jeopardy in the running. Because I think a few weeks ago when Spurs were fifth, but well in touch with Villa, and it was a kind of straight battle for fourth place, it looked then as if fifth would be enough for Champions League anyway. So there just wasn't this jeopardy. There wasn't this kind of pressure and results. And now that Villa are kind of 7 points clear and it's looking pretty tricky for Spurs to claw back fourth, given the fixtures they've got, there's still not a kind of jeopardy. Because as you said, I don't think anyone thinks United or Newcastle are going to be consistent enough to catch Spurs over the last four or five games. And I don't really now see Spurs kind of putting together enough of a run to dislodge Villa, who look very solid. So it's felt for different reasons for a while as though there's not a huge amount of jeopardy. And I would add to that that I just kind of detect that there isn't the same desperation for Champions League football now among fans as there would have been in previous years. Like, obviously, everyone's different. You can't speak for a fan base as a whole. But I think there is a sense now that, like, Spurs have done the big nights at Wembley. They've beaten Real Madrid. They've been in the Champions League. They've tasted it. And now, actually, I do think winning something is a priority. There's this desperation, really, for silverware. And I think a lot of fans see the Europa League, particularly next year when there's no drop down from the Champions League. It's a really, really winnable competition. So I think a lot of fans who kind of think about the game and think about Spurs' prospects of lifting a trophy at the end of next season actually think, well, would it be so bad to be in the Europa League? So I think for different reasons, it doesn't really feel like there's the same pressure as there might have been in different seasons.
I just have to say to anybody that's just tuned in now, I didn't actually go live for maybe the first kind of 2 minutes of me and Dan talking. I'm experimenting with something new here, so forgive us. But my question to Dan was essentially, the mood around this fixture feels a bit flat, which is a surprise, considering it's a Chelsea game. I wanted to ask you, mate, because it felt like after the Arsenal game, for the the first time, it felt like Ange was maybe, I don't know if prickly is the word, but he had a few comments for the officials. And that's been highlighted by a lot of Arsenal and Chelsea fans, an air of hypocrisy to that, given that nearer the start of the season when it was all going well for Spurs, he was going to like leave the officials to do their job. What do you think has kind of brought about that change in him?
I don't actually agree with the premise. I don't think there has been a great change in Ange, to be honest. He's always quite prickly. You clearly get a vibe from him when you're seeing him every week in the press conferences that he basically doesn't suffer fools gladly. You know, you have to think about your questions. He's not going to take any shit or play ball if it's a kind of patronising or poorly researched question to him. And I think on top of that, like any kind of top manager, he doesn't like losing. He doesn't like bad results. And I think that that's true of pretty much any manager at that level. You know, they're going to be a bit more prickly and a bit shorter after bad results. And I think we've seen that in the last few weeks, but I haven't kind of detected a big change. He does quite like to be kind of contrary in press conference a lot of the time and kind of sort of back leading questions. But yeah, that's just him. I think in general, it's a kind of privilege to listen to him. He's a great talker. In terms of the official staff, I mean, I haven't really detected that either. He definitely said during the pre-match press conference ahead of Chelsea yesterday that he felt Spurs should have had a penalty and he didn't agree with the Van de Ven offside goal being ruled out. But he kind of framed it in such a way as to say, well, I didn't agree with this, but other people felt it was offside or other people felt this. And I feel like a lot of his exasperation, as you'll know, and as most people listening or watching will know, is kind of reserved for VAR. It isn't. He's less personal with the officials in the way that, say, Klopp or Arteta, to name just two, have been this season. I think he's careful not to use too emotive a language and kind of make it personal.
So you're saying there hasn't been a sort of a change in his mood or anything. He's always been quite prickly. So I guess this would lead me on to the piece that you've written today, where you are highlighting the fact that Ange believes that not everybody is bought into his mentality, his way of doing things, his philosophy. Can you expand on that for us a bit, mate? Because again, that to me, just at least from the outside, it feels like a bit of a tonal shift.
Yeah, so the context of that was I asked Ange yesterday how significant the performance with nine men was in the reverse fixture against Chelsea. So how much encouragement basically he took from seeing the nine men camped on the halfway line, playing the high line, still attacking Chelsea and leaving all that space for Nicholas Jackson to score the crappiest hat-trick in Premier League history. You know, what he's talked in the past, particularly when he was at Brisbane Roar, it's in his book. He says that there was this moment when he realised he had the team, and it was when one of his young defenders made the same mistake, I think, twice or three times in a match. He basically lost the ball playing out and leading to goals. And he says, when he did it again, that was a point where I knew that I had them. You know, they were following my instructions and they believed in the instructions. So I asked Ange yesterday whether the Chelsea game was a kind of similar moment where he felt like he'd got everyone on board because they were playing this obviously quite controversial way against 11 men. And he said there's a difference between them doing what I say because I'm telling them to do it and doing what I say because they really believe in it. And he said, I think we're on the way to everyone really believing, but at the moment, I still feel like a majority are just doing it because I'm telling them to do it. And he said, the acid test is effectively, if I didn't come to work, if I stopped going in, would the players and staff continue to work in exactly the same way? And he said, at the moment, he doesn't think a majority would. So that's the kind of context of it. I thought it was interesting. I guess for me, it was a kind of admission, although he didn't say this, this is me reading between the lines, that perhaps the project still isn't as advanced as he wants it to be, or it's certainly not where he wants it to be. I mean, I'd have thought toward the end of the first season, even if you weren't fully kind of fine-tuned and up to speed and have all the players you want, you would have at least got, you know, most people kind of fully bought into your vision. But you know, Ange is kind of honest enough to say that actually that's not the case. You know, he's still working to kind of convert his players. They're following his instructions, which is one thing. You know, they respect his authority, but they're not doing it because they are convinced yet that it's the way to be successful. So which I think it's true of a lot of fans as well, by the way. A lot of people will kind of be supporting it because it's their club, but they won't necessarily be convinced in their heart of hearts that this is going to work long term.
I think I'm there, but I'm enjoying it. If that's kind of what I've always defaulted back to, in the respect that, do I think it's, you know, I think Spurs have, their performance levels have probably declined as the season's gone on, and that worries me somewhat, but I still enjoy his ethos, and I still, most of all, I enjoy the fact that whenever it's put to him about what the sort of the limit of his ambition is, it seems to be that there quite simply isn't one, that he wants to win the very best and biggest things for Tottenham. And do you get a sense that that's still something that he's very much aiming for? Because, you know, there was the club put out a video yesterday. They filmed him from a particularly uncomplimentary angle, I felt. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, look, he looks tired. He looks like he can't be asked, like it's broken him already. But that seems to me, from everything you've said so far, that doesn't feel like that's the vibe, that he's very much on track to still achieve all the things he set out to achieve with Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, I mean, there was a very striking line yesterday in the press conference, because he was getting loads of questions about set pieces, which is totally fair enough. We were all doing our job because this is a big issue and we were scrutinising him on this. And he obviously got a little bit irritated by it, and he ended up just saying, eventually I will create a team that has success and it won't be by practicing set pieces. So it was quite a defiant line. And he came out swinging yesterday. You know, he said several times he's not concerned about that issue, and that, you know, eventually his team would be a success. And I don't think anything's changed. I think, again, you know, when you're kind of a supporter or a reporter, or in my case, I guess occasionally somewhere in the middle, you sort of think, you stew on a result like Newcastle and think, yeah, everything's going to shit. But I don't. Oh, am I allowed to say that? But I don't think, you know, I don't think anything's changed from Ange's perspective. You know, he was expecting a rocky period, a rocky first season, and that's, you know, they're going through that now. And in many respects, they have been going through that, I think, since the first game against Chelsea. You know, that was the kind of catastrophic sort of end point of the record-breaking start, and it's been tricky and patchy since then, I think.
Well, with that in mind then, do you know what the temperature's like within the club? Because, you know, everybody was getting quite excited a few kind of weeks ago. I think it was Romano or somebody similar had speculated about enormous transfer budgets available to Tottenham this summer. And you seem quite surprised by that one, Dan.
Didn't see that. Purely because I just didn't see it. And it's my job to...
£250 million was the figure quoted. And
really?
I did have a laugh about that. But, yeah, this is after many years of following Tottenham Hotspur. That is not from any sort of intel I have on the matter. And, you know, I mean... Do you feel like the club are still fully on board with him, or do you, from what you understand anyway, is there any sort of sense that people are at all worried about how the season's panned out? Because it's hard to kind of say, really, whether, I know a lot of people say Spurs lost Kane this season, you know, they're going to finish fifth or sixth, hopefully fifth, or, I mean, hopefully fourth, but looking in, you know, ever more unlikely. Some people, there's a debate as to whether or not this season has been successful. Do you feel like the club are fully on board with Ange still at this point?
I haven't detected anything to suggest they're not. And interestingly enough, Pochettino, who is always under a bit of pressure at Chelsea, said something quite revealing in his press conference yesterday, which was that he thinks a lot of the abuse he's getting is on social media. A lot of the doubters and skeptics and people that want him out are basically on Twitter. And when he meets Chelsea fans, when he's walking his dog in, it was very Brent. It was kind of classic Pochettino. But when he meets Chelsea fans, when he's walking his dog, he says he feels a lot of support. And I think that theory could be put to the test tonight, by the way, if they're outplayed at Stamford Bridge. But I think that kind of speaks to a phenomenon in modern football, really. I mean, there's a lot of noise about Ange at the moment, and I'm certainly seeing a lot of stuff, but I just wonder if it's because I'm terminally online and terminally on Twitter. You know, I think a lot of the match-going fans are still singing his name. Most people are smart enough to realise that, given expectations at the start of the season, certainly after Kane left, it's still been a good season overall and Spurs have made massive progress. I think there's a realisation in the club that they're just at the start of something and that they had to build again after the kind of win now managers project or concept didn't work. So, you know, I don't detect anything at all to sort of suggest there's any wavering on Ange behind the scenes. I mean, in a column I wrote this week, I said, if Spurs still have the same problems, in fact, this wasn't on a column, it was on a podcast, sorry, another podcast, but I said, if Spurs still have the same problems in kind of November next year, they're still wide open, they're still conceding from set pieces, then I think that's probably the time to start really questioning Postecoglou. But I think if you look at any progressive coach, including Guardiola, by the way, who I think I'm right in saying won his first 10 games at Man City without ever falling behind. So a pretty similar start to the one that Ange made, but even better. And looked like he'd already cracked English football. And then had a really rocky patch around January. Lost 4 of 8 games, got stuffed 4-0 at Goodison Park. And they picked up at the end of the season and finished third in his first season, which Spurs, you know, they're not going to finish third, but they could still pick up. Even he struggled. If you look at any progressive coach, they have these periods where it goes quite badly wrong when they're trying to change things. And Postecoglou is trying to change a lot. And I do think there is that understanding at the club. And I kind of would urge fans that are sort of wavering on Ange to hold their nerve a little bit. That's what I wrote in my column. Because I just think it's really in the context of what he's trying to do, it is still very early days.
What's the sort of sense you get from most of the players that you've spoken to when you talk about him? You know, we've had sort of Kulusevski not too long ago speaking about him with pretty effusive praise, wasn't he?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You seem to be quite taken with him. Does that seem to be echoed amongst most of them? I'm just kind of interested to know, given that I'm trying to sort of essentially discern whether or not his comments about not all of the players being bought into what it is that he's doing yet is more just about an education, a learning, a kind of belief thing, or if he's kind of digging some of them out, saying they're not really fit for purpose. See also the comments about a few more of them should be playing like Romero did after the North London.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. When you put those two comments together, there is probably a little emerging trend. But again, I think that's kind of normal, isn't it? I mean, he's had two transfer windows. He said sort of several times, we're a long way from the squad that I want and we're a long way from where we need to be to compete for all the top honours. I think he's also said it's going to take more than four windows in total. So, i.e., at this point next year, he still have squad building to do. So, it kind of make if he's thinking, and you know, I don't know who he wants to bin off, but he will. And it, you know, is kind of decent as the squad looks on paper when everyone's fit. At least, you know, there'll be a lot of players in there who he'll be thinking, these guys don't cut the mustard. You know, they're not the right type of players for me. So, yeah, I think definitely he might be alluding to that in his comments this week. I mean, in terms of, you know, when we get to speak to the players, obviously, you know, with the caveat that they are very media trained and are never going to let anything slip, you know, they are very on board with this project. And Kulusevski is a good example, actually. He's a really good talker who always has time for the media. And, you know, he's been really effusive about Postecoglou as kind of a young, energetic guy who's sort of versatile. You know, I think he loves the sort of high-risk approach. You can tell that Van de Ven loves playing it, and he's spoken very well about it. I think after his debut, so months ago now, but he spoke about just how much he enjoyed playing in this kind of high-risk defensive line. So I do think there's a appreciation of what Postecoglou's trying to do. Maddison was loving it in the first half of the season. He was kind of given this slightly different role where he was able to roam around the structure a bit more. Obviously, he's gone off the boil massively. But I think on the whole, he's got the squad respecting him and listening to him, but he still needs to make them true believers. And that's really what he was talking about.
Who's out to date then, mate? I mean, we know we've got Werner and Davis out for the rest of the season. What's the rest of the squad looking like ahead of Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, there's no other sort of fresh injury news that I know of. I mean, well, I'd be interested in your view as much as mine, but I think he's got a few big decisions. I mean, left back, I think he's going to play Emerson, I would imagine. That's what happened.
Feels like all we can do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like a lot of managers, namely Guardiola and Arteta, to name just two, are very happy to play a centre-half at left-back. I mean, we've seen Kiwior play there for Arsenal a lot. It was kind of his position to lose before he had a shocker in that Bayern first leg. Guardiola plays Guardiola, Ake, other players there. So could he put Dragos in there? I know he's right-footed. I don't know. Emerson's right-footed as well. I think it'll be Emerson. I think he's got a decision to make in the midfield. I think probably Bissouma comes back in. Højbjerg, I don't think, did enough to keep his place. That struck me as a bit of an odd pick from Ange anyway, but perhaps it was an attempt to kind of get Bissouma kind of jolted into gear a bit more. And then in the front three, you know, I'd quite like to see Richarlison start. I think Son's been pretty ineffectual through the middle, and Richarlison gives the team a kind of focal point and a bit of a presence up there. And then I think you can have Son on the left and Kulusevski or Johnson on the right. And then the last decision is kind of Maddison. Does he drop to the bench? He's been pretty anonymous for weeks now. And I think Kulusevski likes playing at 10 and is good there. So there's
he's
another
really
decision.
Good there, isn't he? I think he looked really good in the North London derby. And going back to Richarlison as well, he's somebody I've been pretty critical of so far in his Tottenham career. I've always wanted it to work out more than I felt it's actually been working out, even when he was kind of scoring goals. But like you say, you felt his presence definitely on the pitch. You felt the kind of the bite and the fact he did present something more of a focal point up top. But
I think Chelsea are going to have to play Alfie Gilchrist at right back. So they haven't got any players. They're missing 14 players. And I quite like the idea of putting Son against him and just telling Son to try and run at him. Spurs are going to be weak at left back as well. And that's where Cole Palmer and Madueke tend to pop up and they're playing well. So it could be a kind of sort of battle of that flank. Really.
Is Cole Palmer in tonight?
I believe so. Yeah. He played the last game. Yeah. I mean, when he got injured, you were kind of thinking that Chelsea had obviously got stuffed 5-0 by Arsenal without him. Then he came back and they got a pretty credible point against Villa from 2-0 down. So, I mean, the amount of... I'm sort of torn with Pochettino, really, because sometimes I think that squad's a basket case and no one could have done any better and he's been dealt an awful hand. And other times I just think, imagine how bad it would have been if he didn't have Cole Palmer. Mm. He's just been phenomenal and must have saved him from the sack about four times this season.
I'm just interested because the problem with this game for me is, and I think the problem with Chelsea this season is that, honestly, every time I've watched them, I can't quite believe they're in the position that they're in. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I've still got that bit of unconscious, you know, I hate to say it, I know he's a snake and all this type of thing, but maybe I've still got that just unconscious protective air over Pochettino or something like that, where I do look at Chelsea and I think, I don't actually think they're that bad. I actually think they tend to play quite well. I think Nicholas Jackson is just a horrendous player. He scores a hat trick again tonight.
He's all right, actually.
I get it, but I just don't think he's a player for that level of football, at least the level of football that Chelsea want to be at. I think he's the type of player that stands out at Brentford and people say, oh, I wonder if he'll get a move to, you know, a bigger club, for example. But I don't feel like Chelsea have been, and I know Cole Palmer has totally taken them to another place and they could have been languishing even further down the table. But even in saying that, there's not many times I've watched Chelsea, barring maybe the Arsenal game, and that felt more like Arsenal being brilliant. I haven't looked at Chelsea and thought they look terrible. They look really bad. They often just look quite unlucky. But, you know, I mean, one might argue that doesn't really make much sense.
One thing I've noticed watching Chelsea this year, and I haven't watched a huge amount of them, but I've seen enough of them to form a few opinions, is just to remark again, it's such an unoriginal point now because it's been done to death, but just how good and how lucky, just how good Moussa Dembele was and how lucky Pochettino was to inherit him. Because Chelsea, when they get in the final third, when Malo Gusto is kind of flying up the flank and Palmer and Sterling and Gallagher and even Jackson are kind of playing some quite intricate stuff when they've got in the final third, they're not a bad team and then they can hurt you and they can play some really good stuff. The problem they've got, I think, is Caicedo and Fernandes are cost $230 million between them, but I don't think they're good enough at kind of resisting opposition press and getting the ball forward. And that's what Dembele was incredible at for Spurs. He just had this ability to resist all kinds of pressure, hold on to it long enough so that everyone ahead of him was in exactly the right position. And that's really important for Pochettino's football, that everyone's kind of in place. And then he could just release it forward and the attack was completely set. And Chelsea don't really have that. And that's been a big problem for them. When they actually get in the final third, then they're quite a dangerous side, I think. But they struggle to kind of get there consistently enough. And then the other thing I would say is that they're just so lacking the kind of intangibles like experience, kind of leadership. There's just not enough senior players in that squad. They're a very, very young, new team that's kind of been mashed together. And as I said, while I think Palmer's bailed out Poch a number of times, in some respects, there's been only so much you can do with that team. It just needed time to kind of settle down after all the chaos and all the comings and goings. I mean, yeah, obviously it's strange seeing Poch at Chelsea, but I personally think they would be pretty mad to sack him and start over again. And from what I hear from sort of inside the club, you know, a lot of the players and staff feel that as well, that they just need a bit of stability now and one or two senior additions.
It doesn't feel like the players have given up on him. It feels like they're...
No. In some respects, like tonight is it's a kind of big game for both managers, isn't it? I mean, like, I don't feel that Postecoglou is kind of under pressure or should be under pressure, but, you know, you lose in the same week to Arsenal and Chelsea, particularly if it's a kind of another defeat where Spurs ship a lot of goals tonight, and then got to go to Liverpool and factoring in the Newcastle game as well. That's not good at all. equally for Pochettino, I think he's just never more than one really bad performance away from a lot of pressure. And Chelsea have such a good record against Spurs at Stamford Bridge. They so rarely lose there that if, you know, if his really depleted side massively struggles tonight, you know, that you could almost see that being a kind of another sort of long-term nail in his coffin. So, particularly given, by the way, that Pochettino just cannot stop flirting with Spurs in his pre-match press conferences, which I do find quite funny.
Has he said something else again today?
He said yesterday. Yeah. He was just asked, like, do you have the same connection with Chelsea as Spurs? And he said, basically, no. You can't compare 6 years to 10 months, and which is completely true. But just be diplomatic and just say, well, you know, I'm here now and I'm really enjoying it, and that's in the past. But he won't and can't, which I think I quite respect, really.
Will it be? I mean, are you looking forward to seeing him again through a Spurs prism, Dan? You used to get on quite well with Maurizio, didn't you? I think he knew that you could speak Spanish, things like that, didn't he?
I'm not going to claim to speak Spanish, so I've forgotten it all. But I enjoyed covering him. I mean, by the end of it, I remember sort of doing an interview with him before the Champions League final, and he gave all of us journalists in the room a hug, and you know, I did really enjoy it, and it was kind of pretty sad when it came to an end, and felt like, you know, like many people sort of associated with Spurs, whether fans or reporters or whatever, that there was kind of unfinished business there, and it ended on a sour note. I'm quite looking forward to it. I mean, it was striking to me like how much of a non-event him coming back in November was, and I think that was just a consequence of the game being so mad and weird with all those VAR checks and all those injuries and the red cards. He kind of became a secondary issue to the sort of damage done to Postecoglou's first 11 over the course of that first 60 minutes of the game. It was just catastrophic, and everyone just sort of forgot about Pochettino being the opposition coach on the touchline.
It was a funny one, wasn't it? I also think part of it was Chelsea coming into that game just looking so terrible, and Spurs absolutely flying at that point. You know, there's that real sort of sliding doors moment, isn't there, that everybody's sharing today on Twitter of Son's goal.
Son missed a big chance.
Well, no, the offside.
Oh, is it disallowed? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You sort of wonder where it had gone from there. But, I mean, just in the few times you have ever spoken to Pochettino since his move to Chelsea, and I don't know how many times that has been, do you think he gets why Spurs fans are unhappy with him about it? Or do you think it's just not something that he entertains talking about? He's just a professional and...
I haven't spoken to him off the record since he went to Chelsea. Before, when he was at PSG, I spoke to Perez a few times. He was very insightful on their time at Spurs and always a good person to talk to. So I don't know. I can't say for sure. I mean, anything he said is kind of out there on the record. I'm sure he does get it. You know, he's someone who clearly understands as much as anyone the emotion of games. And a great example is the Battle of the Bridge. You know, he was never, ever going to criticise the way Spurs played in that game. And he never has, and he never will. Again, he was asked about it yesterday as the Chelsea manager, and he still defended the way Spurs played and effectively said it was great. Even though Dembele gouged Diego Costa's eye out, Spurs had 9 yellow cards and probably should have had a player sent off and probably lost their heads, really, and lost the title with it. But he leans into the emotion of these occasions. He loves it. You know, he wears his heart on his sleeve. So I would be amazed if he, you know, privately doesn't totally get why he's not liked by Spurs fans or the majority of Spurs fans anymore. He will understand that as well as anyone, I'm sure. But he made a career decision.
I had a dream a few weeks ago. I actually met him, and I shook his hand, and I just said to him, "Why? How could you do it? Why did you go there?" He just kind of shrugged, from what I remember. But you know, you can play him. If we beat them tonight, Dan, you can play him the video of that Spurs fan burning his book on a barbecue. Yeah, and see. See what you think about that. Yeah.
Completely sane Spurs fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, Daniel, thank you very much for joining me today. Hopefully, you will be speaking to Mauricio Pochettino after the game today to rub it in his face.
I'll
professional manner, of course.
Yeah, I'll wear a sort of Spurs shirt under my kind of mustard cord shirt that anyone on YouTube will be able to see, and just sort of rip it off in the post-match press conference. Did you see actually that Poch did get berated by a journalist, didn't he, after the press conference recently? I don't know if you saw that on doing the rounds on Twitter.
Somebody said it's a shit way to manage a press conference, that mate. Yeah. Shit way to manage it.
Maybe I'll just channel that guy's energy and just sort of yell at him as he leaves the room. That would be safer.
Yeah, maybe. Right. Thank you very much, Dan. I'll speak to you soon, maybe.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Pleasure.
All right, I've ended that stream on YouTube now. So what I didn't realise is that you have to start the stream on YouTube and as well as on here, but I can... I'll try and give you some sort of explainer as to how to do it, mate, in the future. But,
fine. I'm going to look into that because we want to do some stuff on YouTube, but don't know how. So, that'd be good.
Thanks very much, mate.
All right. Cool. Yeah, pleasure, mate. Take care.
Cheers, mate.
Speak soon. Bye-bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.